listening to the Kabbalah Guy Show.
March 31st, Beis Nisan, Episode 3.
1, 2.
Your home for Haredi thought and opinion, and perhaps some Divrei Torah, located at www.gevaldikai.com. Please leave your comments of the show on the comment line 206-666-4897. That's 206-666-4897. These past 2 weeks have been so busy for me. You know, my original idea for this show had been to stir up a bit of controversy and to give the Haredi viewpoint to the events of the day. There are so many Jewish podcasts, but nobody really explains Yeshivish Hashkafa. I figured there might be some frum people wanting a kosher podcast, but I was surprised by the reaction to the last show. You know, Carol from Israelism Podcast posted a long missive that begins like this. I would like someone who is as frum as you to take an honest look. It really irks me when someone says, here's the argument. Defend it honestly. Look at it objectively. See what the real truth is. And I'm thinking, are you really interested in hearing the truth, or you're just getting emotional about it? But what can I do? I'm being challenged. My first reaction is, okay, what is it that this person wants? I know. She wants me to join her and condemn all the Haredim. But, you know, I feel her complaint is really a double-edged sword. On one hand, she has this emotional argument that her children go to the army, and the Haredim boys, they only go to yeshiva. Okay, so that's one argument. Whatever you're going to say about yeshiva, they're not putting their lives at stake. Okay, but what's a yeshiva? We're going to discuss that. But then there's this logical argument that the citizens of a country that shirk their civil duties should not get the material benefits of living in that country. Therefore, Haredim should not get a penny, or for that matter a shekel, for their institutions, or kitzvat yildim for their families. Kitzvat yildim is what the government pays to Bituach Lomi for people that have kids. And it used to be, when I was in Israel, about 15 years ago, kitzvat yildim was huge. Now, if you went to the army, you got twice as much kitzvat yildim. If you didn't go to the army, you still got quite a bit. It was quite a bit of money. And thanks to Netanyahu, a lot of that got cut out. I'm not quite sure what they get as far as Kitzvat Yeladin nowadays. But even in the good days, there was a difference between people went to the army, people didn't go to the army. People went to the army, got more Kitzvat Yeladin. So there was an economic difference, but you can't say that the Haredim are what you would call in America draft dodgers. You know, it's not like these people from during the Vietnam War who ran to Canada and they were dodging the draft. I mean, everybody agrees that what the Haredim are doing is legal. They are not draft dodgers. You might say that the government system, the law, legal system, is not fair. We can deal with that. But the point that I'm trying to put across is that I understand where she's coming from. She's saying, here, my daughter has to go to the army. Your son gets to go to yeshiva. My daughter has to pay for college. Your son gets paid for learning in Kollel. But then there's this like logical thing. Oh, you're shirking your duty, therefore you shouldn't get any money. You don't pay any taxes, therefore you shouldn't get any money. That's a whole logical argument. We can look at the statistics. That's not for today's show. Now, I did read through all of her 11 theses that she posted on my webpage. Perhaps she's hoping to start a debate, or maybe even a reformation. My first thought was to answer her point by point, and that would really require a whole web page, and I don't have time for that right now. It's right before Pesach, there's a lot of cleaning that has to be done. I've got Kanai Nahara, Mishpacha. It's some ridiculous hour at night right now, and I'm not going to, even though I spent hours and hours and hours researching the subject. I can honestly say I spent 20 hours researching this subject. And I understand what she's getting all emotional about. If your whole content source of information is Ynet or Haaretz, I mean, they do so much Haredi bashing. On the other hand, I can't say that I'm being intellectually honest if all my reading is Yeted Ne'aman and Arutz Sheva, which is where I get my source of information from. So I read a little from the right, a little from the left, and I'm trying to put it all together, and I've been spending hours and hours and hours into this. And right now is not the time to start getting into this point-by-point argument, but I do hope to get back to that. Right now I want to deal with the emotional side of the argument. You know, Thomas Friedman writes in his book, From Beirut to Jerusalem, I'm not sure it's a kosher book, but I'm starting at the beginning from it. He wrote in the beginning of this book, when it comes to discussing the Middle East, people go temporarily insane. So if you're planning to talk to an audience of more than two, you better have mastered the subject. Okay, so I'm trying to master the subject. I agree that you really have to know what you're talking about before you start talking. You know, there's an expression, if you put two Jews in a room, you get three opinions. I can manage to have three opinions just by being in a room all by myself. Okay, let's try to take an honest look at what's going on over here. I did spend a lot of time thinking about this. I'm not completely ready, but I'm not about to give a keynote drasha to the Knesset. Now, as a side point, I really have this whole problem with this podcast business. You know, I really want this to be a fantastic podcast, but how much time am I supposed to spend on it? I mean, the whole podcast is going to be an hour, half hour. I'm not really sure yet. I haven't timed this yet. But, you know, I got a chavrus in the morning. I go to Daf Yomi at night. I missed Daf Yomi tonight because I was busy working on somebody's computer because I also moonlight as a home computer technician. So it's hard to get this to the level of excellence that I really would have preferred. But that's aside. Now, let's counter this argument about she has a daughter that goes to the army, while mine's going to yeshiva. I want to make three points. And this is, again, the point over here is not logical arguments. It's not bringing statistics. It's not proving from polls. It's not proving from Israeli government. But then, you know, you're just arguing with me, well, it's not fair, okay? So I just want to give you the other side of the coin, and I want to do it in three different ways. And you might not agree with me, but that's okay, because I just want you to get the idea of what the mindset is on the other side of the bench. First of all, why do the Arabs hate us? If the Arabs wouldn't hate us, we wouldn't have a problem in the first place, right? Okay. So, there's one argument, and this is, again, an emotional argument. I don't know if this can be proven in any way, but there's an argument that the Arabs have contempt for those who lost connection to their past and to the historic sense of their peoplehood. The story goes like this. There is a former Palestinian terrorist. I was looking around to see who this guy is. His name is Salah Tamari. I noticed that he was at one point a member of the PA, of the ruling PA. I don't know if he's part of Fatah, and if he's not in the government anymore, because the government is now taken over by Hamas. The Arabs are finally getting honest. They say what they mean. But at any rate, this guy, Salah Tamari, spoke to an Israeli journalist whose name was Aharon Barnea of the complete transformation he underwent in an Israeli prison. The story goes he was in prison, he was completely dispirited of any hope that the Palestinians would one day realize any of their territorial dreams, and he was ready to give up. Then it came Pesach. And he saw the Jew who was guarding the cell, the Jewish warden, eating a pita. Tamari was shocked. He asked the guy, how could you go eat bread on Pesach? I mean, you're Jewish, right? It's Pesach. How could you eat bread on Pesach? I mean, even the Arab understood. So the warden said, what does that have to do with me? That's something that took place over 2,000 years ago. I'm not exactly sure why he says 2,000 years ago. I mean, it's Pesach is talking about something that happened about 3,000 or more years ago. But this warden said, it's over 2,000 years ago. I have no shaychus. It has nothing to do with that. That entire night, and remember, this is Tamari said this over to an Israeli journalist. He said that the entire night he couldn't sleep. He thought to himself, a nation whose members have no connection to their past, and are capable of so openly transgressing their most important laws, that nation has cut off all its roots to the land. He concluded that the Palestinians could, in effect, achieve all their goals. From that moment, he determined to fight for everything, not a percentage, not such crumbs as Israelis might throw us, but for everything, because opposing us is a nation that has no connection to its roots, which are no longer of interest to it. Tamari goes on to relate how he shared this insight with tens of thousands of his colleagues, and none were convinced. In other words, the whole reason why the Palestinians feel that they have the power to attack us is because the secular Jews have been totally cut off from their roots. I mean, the argument was made. You know, a general came to a group of yeshiva boys, and he said, you know, we have to protect the Eretz, we have to protect the land, we have a right to the land because it says in the Torah, whatever, and he starts quoting Pesukim. That's very nice and good. So what? You take the Torah, and the part of the Torah that you like that says, oh, you get the land, that you keep. That you want, that you believe in. But the rest of the Torah that says about the mitzvahs that we have to do, then all of a sudden that you don't believe, how do you split things up like that? And once you go and you say, oh, I don't care about bread on Pesach, and I don't care about all of the laws that are written in the Torah, because for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, so then what gives you a right to say that you have a right to the land? It's only the Haredim, or not just the Haredim, but anybody who's dati, who keeps the Torah, they are the people that actually have the right to the land. So, it's the people who don't keep the Torah, they're the ones that have to do all the fighting. Because after all, if everybody would be dati, then the Arabs wouldn't have been signing up with us in the first place. That's the first emotional argument. Point number two. You know, there's one thing, there's a lot of things I don't get that I hear. But one of the strong things that you've got people saying that really the Arabs are great people, or good people, or okay people. And it's just those people who are in a lower socioeconomic class, those are the people that are afraid of the Arabs. But people that are wealthy, or people that are higher social economic class, or people that are more knowledgeable and university educated, oh, they're not afraid of the Arabs. Yeah, I mean, I guess not. I mean, why should you be afraid of Arabs? I mean, just because they call for the destruction of the State of Israel, and they martyr themselves at crowded bus stops, and in department stores, and then they praise the martyrs, you know, and give them the full 21-gun salute at their funerals, and they're wonderful people, and everybody, and you have a whole government now of Hamas, who says everybody should go, basically, and blow themselves up, and kill as many Israelis as they can. That doesn't make them bad people. I mean, God forbid. They're only reacting to the oppressive conditions that they're living under. You know, if you would just give them a piece of land, they'd calm down and they would stop shooting Katyusha rockets at us. You know, it's interesting. But this philosophy that, you know, the Arabs are really basically okay and they really wouldn't fight us, it's just all about some land, that is the opinion of all people. That's the Satmar Shita. That's the opinion of Satmar. You see, Satmar wants us to get a little historical perspective here. Or, to paraphrase Carolan, the Israelism's last show, a generation that doesn't have a good history of what is going on here sees things in the media, and it's not even close. People have to understand where this all started. Well, Satmar makes the following claim. I don't know if it's true or not. I haven't been able to research this, but they claim that good relations existed between the Jewish and Arab communities, and that as long as the leadership of the Jewish community conducted themselves according to the principles of Judaism and did not provoke their non-Jewish neighbors, the Arabs were very friendly and neighborly, and a spirit of mutual respect was typical. I mean, the various caliphs and the Jews, they got along just fine. It's only after the Zionists started saying, and it was Herzl, and he said, oh, we need to have a state for the Jews. And then the Arabs, one second, they began to change their attitude. Because then they saw that it's not that the Jews want to live in Eretz Yisrael. They want to have their own country. They want to be boss. Ooh, one second. They don't like that. And that's what got them all upset. But it was only because the Zionists started making all this rash about how they want to take over this country. But as long as they just want to live there, just wanted to live there, and the Arabs can be the bosses, that didn't bother them. The Arabs got along fine with the Jews. I question this. I don't know if this is really true, because I know there's a famous story of Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, who was trampled by an Arab as he was making his way to Eretz Yisrael, and he was making his way to the Kosel, and he got trampled by a horseman. Kind of wondering if the Satmar Shita is true. But this is the Satmar Shita, that really the Arabs are great people. Sounds very close to what I sound like the Chilonim that say, just give them the land. It sounds like right out of Omar's book. Give them the land, and then they'll be calm, and they'll be quiet, and they'll get along peacefully with us. It sounds wonderful. But the only difference is that the secular people are deluding themselves into thinking, oh, we're going to give them part of the land, and they'll let us keep the other half. Hamas never said that. You get your land, and then we give us more land, and give us more land. And Satmar says, fine, who needs an Israeli government anyway? Let it be an Arab government. As long as you let the Jews live there, who cares who's running the government anyway? Let me continue on with this interesting opinion. They now blame the Zionists. Listen to this. However, instead of learning from this experience... Oh, I'm sorry, back up. Once there was this whole issue that there were Zionists, then the Arabs didn't distinguish between the Zionists and the other Jews that say, no, we have to be tolerant and peaceful. Oh, yeah. There were outbreaks of violence here and there. I mean, Chevron Yeshiva, in the 20s, they went and they massacred the Yeshiva Bachram in Chevron. And how many Yeshiva Bachram fought in 48 against the Arabs? I mean, they understood what an Arab was. But Satmar says the whole reason that the Arabs fought in the first place is because the Zionists were trying to create a state. And therefore, that's what caused the outbreaks of violence and the bloodshed, and many people died. Now, Satmar says that the Zionists should have learned their lesson, and they should have stopped this dangerous, lawless behavior. Okay, that's pretty wild. The Zionists use these events, but the argument is they say the Zionists use these events as additional proof for the need of a state and an army to protect the Jews from violence. Jewish blood was of no importance to the Zionists and compared to their lofty national goals. Okay, you have to understand that there's this whole thing that the Zionists were more interested in having a state than they were in having Jews. And you can argue with me on that. But that's the Satmar Shita, that was actually the Zionists that caused... Are you ready for this? No, I better not say this. But I think the opinion is, a Satmar opinion is, that it's the Zionists that caused the Holocaust. Okay, I hope you're sitting. But at any rate, I'm not saying I agree with that. I don't agree with that part. But Satmar is part of the Haredi community. Okay? So they have their opinion. Why should we go to the army? It's the Zionists that caused the problems in the first place. As long as the Haredim were there, there was no Arab-Israeli conflict. And therefore, the Zionists who created the conflict by creating the state, let them go to the army and leave us alone. Okay, that's their opinion. Now, I want to tell you something. This is, even though this is Satmar, and maybe this sounds strange to you, but Satmar considers the Nuturi Karta who go to Iran and say, oh, go take over Israel. You know, maybe, I don't know what the Nuturi Karta say, maybe we'll bring some atomic bombs back and blast the country for you so that we can kill everybody. I don't know what the Nuturi Karta is thinking, but even Satmar thinks the Nuturi Karta is kooks. Now, I met Moshe Hirsch, because I worked in Mir, and he used to hang out in Mir a little bit. And he's like, I think the head of the Nuturi Karta. The guy is brilliant, okay? But I think he went off the deep end, okay? He's a really dangerous... Well, I don't think he's that dangerous. He's cool. He's a kook, okay? I think the Nuturi Karta, when you see like these 20 guys there, I think they represent themselves. I don't think they represent... Somebody said, there are thousands of the Nuturi Karta. I don't believe it, okay? There might be thousands of Satmar, actually there's tens of thousands of Satmar, if there's not hundreds of thousands of Satmar. But the Nuturi Karta is a little bunch of kooks. And I'm surprised. Moshe Hirsch lives in Eretz Yisrael. And I'm just shocked the Israeli government hasn't put him in jail for treason. But I guess there's a reason for that.
Once there was a soldier. Since he joined the army, it hasn't been the same. Oh. was all bouncy. He wasn't feeling blah. He always got up early to take Kriyashima.
He once was taken prisoner. His captor had a knack for torturing his captives until he made them crack. He said,
"Come on, start talking."
But Benji answered, "Nope.
It's time to daven mincha. Please untie my rope."
Benji blew a siren before a sneak attack. His unit was alerted and beat the bombers back.
Hey, Benji, how'd you know to blow before the planes were showing?
It's Rosh Hashanah morning, that's a chauffeur I was blowing.
Kiki v'chalif ad batachnu.
One dark and dreary night, the sentry roared,
"Who goes there?"
and gripped his rifle tight. Benji said,
"Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu."
"Okay, no,"
replied the guard,
"Hashem Elokeinu,"
and let him pass on through.
Meals were very tasty, but Benji had his own. Kosher cheese and pickles and chocolate ice cream cones. His buddies always snickered, but he just laughed at them. Because he was enlisted in the army of Hashem.
Kiki v'chalev ad batachnu.
Now, the third argument is that if all of Klal Yisrael would be in yeshiva, there would be no need for an army. In Tanakh, we learn a story about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, that the army of Sancheiriv, which I think was 300,000 strong, was about to attack Yerushalayim. And what did King Chizkiyahu do? What did Melech Chizkiyahu do? He ordered that all the Jews from the north through the south should all study Torah. What happened? They're all studying Torah. You've got this huge army coming. A nace happened. A miracle happened. And the entire army was wiped out. Came Chatzos HaLaila. That's one of the things that we say by the Pesach Seder. Vehi b'Chatzos HaLaila. And his entire army was wiped out. I think he was left with just like two sons. You know, I was brought up with story after story about the nisim that occurred in Israel during the Six-Day War, in 1948, and lately I've been hearing all these stories about General Erwin Rommel's miraculous failure at El Alamein in World War II, where the Zionist leaders were expecting Rommel to come in, and he was very close to just running over the whole country. And this is a famous story about the Panevish Rav, that he went and he bought the land that the Panevish Yeshiva is on at the time when everybody else was thinking of fleeing the country because they were afraid the Nazis were coming. The whole battles that occur between the Arabs and the Israelis, it's all nisim, but all the scuds fell, and how many people were killed? How many scuds fell? 39? I mean, you've got a power plant in Ashkelon, and it's being shot at by these Arabs with these rockets, It hasn't been hit yet. You know, all these things are nisim. I mean, you read about what the Arabs are doing in Iraq and how many people get blown to bits in Iraq. And you compare that to when the Arabs attack in Israel, it's not even close. It seems to me that, like, there must be 10 times as many people getting killed in Iraq as there are in Israel. Why is that? Because Hashem is protecting the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Well, the Haredim feel it's because you learn Torah that gives us the schus to be able to have the heavenly assistance to be able to win against the Arabs. So, the Haredi emotional argument, in a nutshell, is that it's really the secular Jews that cause the problem. So, they can go ahead and try to improve security with an army. We're going to solve it by hanging on to our tradition, learn Torah, and not be so concerned about who rules over a particular piece of land. The main thing is that Jews have a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, and I really belong there. I want to end with one last story. The Yiddish theater was not known for its championing of Torah values. So it wasn't surprising when 2 students came running to the Brisker Rav, breathless with indignation. Does the Rav know about the new play the Yiddish theater has put on? The people associated with it should be put in cherem, excommunication. They're making fun of the Torah. And they were playing out what it says in the Torah about Parsha Shoftim. One of the actors says, "Who is the man who has built a new house and has not inaugurated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the war and another man will inaugurate it." So 10 people get up and walk off the stage. Then he says, "Who is the man who has planted a vineyard and not redeemed it? Let him go home, lest he die and another man redeem it." So another 10 people get up and leave the stage. Then he says, "And who is the man who has betrothed a woman and not married her? Let him go home, lest he die in the war and another man marry her." So another 20 people get up and walk off the stage. Then he says, "Whoever is afraid, let him go home so he won't scare everyone else." So now everyone leaves the stage except 2 actors. One is playing the Vilna Gaon and the other one the Shagas Aryeh. The Vilna Gaon says to Shagas Aryeh, "Kvod Rav, you take the first shot." And the Shagas Aryeh replies, "No, no, I insist after you." As they argue about who's going to start the war, the curtain falls and the audience laughs and claps. It's terrible! The Brisker Rav paused and then said, "Well, what's wrong with that?" The jaws of the students dropped. They gazed at the Rav dumbstruck. The Brisker Rav continued, "The only thing they forgot is the last scene." "What last scene?" "The last scene is where the Vilna Gaon and the Shagas Aryeh win the war." You see, the strength of the Jewish people is not in the vastness of its numbers, nor its military might. The Torah calls us that we're the smallest of the nations. Our strength is a function of our righteousness and our faithfulness to Hashem, who is the Ba'al Melchamos. So, I was asked to explain the yeshivish expression, krum as a pretzel. Now, let me explain it. That in a yeshiva, what's a yeshiva? You have 2 people, they're learning together, or they go to a shir, and they're learning a piece of Gemara. Now, when you learn a piece of Gemara, it's gotten very terse, and you've got to analyze it line by line. And it's got to make sense, okay? You can't just say, "Well, I feel that he's saying this," or "I feel like that." You've got to prove your point. You've got to bring a raya. You have to bring a proof and a svara and a logical argument. And a svara needs to be glot. It's got to be smooth. It has to be clear. It can't be warped. It can't be krum. It can't be twisted. A really bad svara is krum, or twisted, as a pretzel. You see, in a yeshiva, there's a basic assumption that things have to make sense. Though, funakash is startmanisht. That means you can live with a question. I mean, it's possible to have a question. You could say, teku. In a yeshiva, you're not really learning halacha l'maisa anyway, so a sugi can end off, and you could say, "Oh, this one says this pshat, this one says that pshat, this one has this opinion, this one's that opinion." That's fine, but it's got to make sense. In this podcast, I've presented 3 opinions. And again, the 3 opinions were that the reason Haredim don't have to go to the army is because it's really the secular fault. Because the whole reason the Arabs are upset at the Jews is because they see the Jews as people who have lost touch with their past. That's one argument. The second argument is that they see the Jews as people that came in and are trying to make a government and taking away land from them. But if the Jews would just stay there under Arab control, like the Haredim did in the early 1800s and before Herzl, there wouldn't be any war. The Tzionim started the war. Tzionim can fight the war. And then you have the Yeshivish Hasvara. The Yeshivish Hasvara is, we are fighting the war, and we are going to the army. But we're fighting the war in a different way. We're fighting the war by learning Torah. And by learning Torah, we get help from Shemayim in order to be able to fight against the enemy. And if it was a matter of the Haredim going to battle, the truth is, it only takes two tzaddikim, and two tzaddikim could stand up against all the Arab armies, because in their schus, they would be saved. It doesn't take thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. Now, that's the three arguments. If you feel that any of them are krum, please post your comments on the show's webpage, gevaldikguy.podomatic.com, or email me, gevaldikguy, G-E-V-A-L-D-I-K-G-U-Y, @podomatic.com, or call the comment line, 206-666-4897. That's 206-666-4897. I'd like to thank Podomatic for providing the hosting for the show, the people created Audacity for their fine software, Charlie and Carol Wardy, whose real names are Vardy, because they live in Eretz Yisrael, from the Israelisms podcast for their inspiration, Jeff Osais, the new Jewish wake-up call, for posting a comment on the site. I'm Jeff. My Rosh Yeshiva of Motel Weinberg had very definite opinions about what constitutes Jewish music, and I'll be discussing that on a future show. Thank you, ALAR82, for your comments on the show to Carol. Sounds like you've got enough material to have your own show. Maybe we should get together sometime. I'd like to thank you for listening to the show. You're one of 50-some people who have downloaded the show, and it's because of you that I am up at this unearthly hour talking into a microphone. Have a Chag Hashem V'Sameach. Hopefully the next podcast will be in about another 2 weeks.